There is way more going on at the southern border with illegal immigrants, terrorists coming into the country. Today, I have an expert to help me go through this. Chuck, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Sure, Stephen. Good to be with you.
So let me tell my audience just a little bit about you. Charles Marino is a national security expert, a writer, author, guest expert on news stations all over the world. The first thing I want to ask you, Chuck, is I've lost a little bit of hope in the FBI, but at the same time, I know that they protect our country. FBI Director Christopher Wray has warned over and over again to Congress, national security committees, that the open Southwest border poses a grave national security threat. Why is this information not enough to shut down the border? And are people outside of the White House in Washington, D.C. concerned about the border and the terrorist activity?
Yes, to your last question, absolutely. This is the thing that is keeping law enforcement and intelligence officials up at night, is the inability of the U.S. government to thoroughly vet those migrants that are encountered in the Southwest border from over 180 different countries, many special interest locations. These are designated locations where we know for a fact that terrorists reside and terrorist organizations are still active. And the other thing that we know is we've got over 2 million what are called gotaways. These are individuals, migrants that are not encountered by Customs and Border Protection and come into the country pretty much undetected. So you have no idea what they're doing, what their backgrounds are, and what their purposes are for entering the country. But, you know, as I typically say, it's the president that is responsible for setting the national security strategy of the country, which is why he owns this crisis entirely.
Yeah. Okay, so you said something that I want to better understand. So it's not just we're finding terrorists at the border. It's that we know that they're coming from locations where our national intelligence knows that there's terrorist activities. That's how we're putting the one and one together to make two?
Oh, absolutely. And okay. And to add to that, unfortunately, we know that our border has been exploited by criminal aliens. That is, those illegal aliens that have pre-existing criminal records that they're from their country of origin, and then they come in and commit further crimes against American citizens. And then also we know that there are examples where those on the terrorist watch list have been let into the country, some roaming the country freely around a year or more. And this is entirely unacceptable. So the point is, look, based on the numbers approaching almost 15 million, I would say is the fair number now of illegal migrants coming in to the country through all of those different buckets, encounters, gotaways, and then those that go purely undetected. The natural assumption is we've been beat here and we've been beat bad. We can just look at an adversarial country outside the scope of terrorism like China, where we have Chinese nationals entering our country at a rate 1,700%. Let me say that again, 1,700% higher from what that level was during the former Trump administration. So we've got a lot of different moving pieces here. All are very concerning. We know China is working very closely with the Mexican cartels in the production of fentanyl, which is killing hundreds of thousands of Americans a year.
Yeah, I think when most people think of illegal immigrants coming in, they're thinking Mexico, they're thinking Central America, South America, but you're saying a 1,700% increase in the number of people coming from China?
That's right. And historically, you would be correct with the point that you've made. The problem is, under this administration, is that all deterrence has been lost. And that is because the administration has taken the unprecedented action, and I'll go into why it's unprecedented, of abandoning their federal responsibilities to secure the border and enforce the immigration laws. Now, it's unprecedented because these are two essential pillars to protect the homeland, especially after the attacks of September 11th, where you had the Department of Homeland Security created, and exactly to my point, absorbed these two essential functions of protecting the country via our borders and immigration laws. This has not historically been a partisan issue. Both Republicans and Democrats, and my book will cite this, have demonstrated that they agree that these are two primary pillars of protecting the country and the American citizens. Remember, former President Obama was given the nickname of as the deporter in chief because immigration advocacy groups did not appreciate the high number of deportations, approximately 450,000 a year. They thought that he was overdoing it, but he came down firm on what he needed to do with respect to the immigration system, especially those that found their way in and were committing additional crimes within the U.S. They were prioritized for immediate deportation. This administration has no such programs. As a matter of fact, they've prevented immigration and customs enforcement from doing interior enforcement operations like that during their administration.
Yeah, I remember reading about how people were hard on Obama for his harsh stance on that. But you would think with his vice president being Joe Biden, that Joe Biden would have carried that same Obama stance forward. Is this because Biden has been hijacked by the progressive, more left side of the Democrat Party? Or is this NGOs that now are getting so much money that they refuse to give up that money? And now this is just their job, getting people into the country?
You know, I think it's how the politician as an individual responds at the time with their campaign and then ultimately their administration, how they respond to that pressure. Look, I served in the Department of Homeland Security during the Obama administration for the Secretary of DHS. I know that there's always this consistent pressure and campaign for the United States to go softer on its immigration laws. I think it comes down to the individual. And I think when it came down to former President Obama, it was that he knew it was not good for the safety and security of the country. And he also knew that he couldn't sell it to the American people. And that was the right decision, which is why his numbers were where they were. But I think President Biden has obviously caved to that, and not only caved to it as an external party, but brought many of those immigration advocates into places like the Department of Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, to now implement those far left policies.
Interesting. Okay. So Obama couldn't sell it. So Biden just is cramming it down our throat, bringing in all of the people. And I have to imagine that some of this started out with like kindness, like, oh, let more people into the country. But now it's gotten away from them so much that it's like, I don't know how you get it back except for a different administration that has a more pro-legal immigration stance and an anti-illegal immigration stance?
Well, let me make this point, and we also focus on this in the book. The Biden administration, when they came in, said that they were going to be more humane to migrants than the previous administration. I think 3.5 years now into the Biden presidency, they have demonstrated that removing all structure and deterrence and enforcement actually makes the situation more dangerous. This is not just a national security crisis. This is also a humanitarian crisis, which we've always said from the beginning. So it actually provides for a safer message and a safer outcome when you have deterrence that prevents this dangerous journey from being undertaken in the first place. It removes the high number that we're seeing now of human trafficking, sex trafficking, drug trafficking. And let's remember, one thing I always point out to people is this doesn't end once people cross the border, however they cross the border. This continues within the United States. Many of these migrants are going to continue to pay back the fees that they're paying the cartels to traffic through services. And those services take a lot of different forms, and none of them are good for the United States.
Yeah. How do they track people? Like, I know some of them come in, they owe $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. How does the cartel track them so that they can get their money back?
Well, what they do is the family that remains in the country of origin is held to account. And if they don't stay in touch, and if they don't do what they need to do to pay back the fees and fulfill the promises that were made in exchange for being trafficked, the family that's left behind will be the ones to pay the price. And we're talking about grandparents, we're talking about parents, cousins. I mean, look, we see this all the time in Mexico, you know, with respect to reporters. We see it with respect to politicians that are seeking to run for local office, especially. These are extremely violent outcomes. And so the cartel's word is good here in the sense that if they say you don't meet the criteria of fulfilling your obligations to us, they will seek retribution on those family members remaining behind.
Okay. Wow. Interesting. I was not aware of that. You know, you mentioned this now being a humanitarian crisis. I think about these women and these little kids and the price they're paying with their bodies. And I can't imagine many of them don't have PTSD. It's a horrible situation. One thing, Chuck, that I wanted to better understand, NGOs, non-government organizations, are being given hundreds of millions of dollars of U.S. taxpayer money. Their budgets increase every year. The government seems to placate them by giving them more money. Are U.S. tax dollars essentially being used to overwhelm the country? Or let me say that differently. This nonstop use of American taxpayer money to bring people in, it almost feels like they're using our money to invade us and take us over. I just don't know how to see it any other way.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I do is teach a course called The Politics of National Security and National Security Strategy. I studied at the National War College in D.C., and I can tell you, with every strategy, there are risks and costs. And so what are the risks and the costs associated with this crisis that's been allowed to exist here under the Biden administration? And that is, Americans have been paying the price in a number of ways. One, in some cases with their lives, via fentanyl and attacks from criminal aliens, as we discussed, coming into the country. And the other way is through their tax dollars. Now, one thing I'll correct you on is, because I just spoke about this last night on Fox, is $2 billion is the latest number with the accounting that has gone to about three or four different NGOs. And now let's talk about the historical role of these non-governmental organizations and the current role under the Biden administration. Historically, these NGOs have been catching illegal migrants, that is, meeting them where they enter down at the southwest border and helping them with the immediate humanitarian needs, right? Medical, lodging, food, and all of that. Where the NGOs are now is they're actually an active partner of the government, and they're doing the things that the government doesn't want to do or have the ability to do. Now, some of this has to do with plausible deniability on the part of the U.S. government, and that's what they want to have. But I can tell you, with respect to the Department of Homeland Security, I've said before, the NGOs are now effectively serving as what I would say their travel agency, handling movements of migrants around the country, their lodging, and the logistics associated with that. Health and Human Services, the NGOs are supporting, there's no better way to say it, the continued trafficking of children. And one thing to point out, why I use that term, is because this administration early on decided in their wisdom to cancel the contract for DNA testing of children coming into the United States. So for those that are claiming to be family members, there is no 100%, 99% certainty through DNA to confirm that these children are being turned over to parents. As a matter of fact, we know that there's a high number in the thousands, double digits, 85,000, I think was the last number, where there's no true accounting of where they are. Now, all this money is being thrown to the NGOs, and historically associated, we saw this during COVID, when you throw that large amount of money with no oversight at these NGOs, there's going to be what? Waste, fraud, and abuse. And what are we seeing now, based on the results of FOIA requests that were done during an article by the Free Press that I commented on, is that we're seeing it go to executive perks, high salaries, and we're seeing it go towards wasteful resources like vendors for children to talk to plants. We're talking about musicians, you know, making $550,000 for their services. So the inspector generals from both HHS and DHS really have to come in. And let's remember, the IGs report to Congress. So Congress can direct the inspector generals to say, get in there now and look at this. But I think from a fraud rate, this is going to rival, maybe not from a monetary amount, but it's going to rival in percentage of waste, fraud, and abuse what we saw with the COVID relief funds.
Wow. That is...
There's no doubt about that. No doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you saw this, but it just broke yesterday that part of the Russian army was able to just absolutely go in and dominate a city in Ukraine, and they did some inspecting and figured out that there were hundreds of fake contractors building reinforcements, and all they were doing is stealing money. They didn't build a thing. And we're seeing this at the southern border as well, where it's like there's just so much money moving that people are like, nobody's really going to check this. And that temptation is just so great. Another thing, Chuck, you know, I don't know if it was a month or 2 months ago, but there was this big story of about 200 illegal immigrant men rushing the border in Texas, knocking down fencing, tearing it down. Knocking down National Guard soldiers. And I just read that the judge has not only let them into the country, gotten them all the perks from Human Health Services, all of that, but then wiped their criminal records clean so that they could start life off in America with no criminal record. Like, hello, like this is insane to me. Why do you think they would do something like that?
We see this over and over and over again. It's why we have the trouble in our cities with respect to local crime, and it's applicable here with the border crisis. And that is, you know, typically you need synergy between the law enforcement operations and the judicial. Now, with respect to what happened in Texas, as you know, there are some judges at the local level. And the federal level that are not exactly pleased that Texas has stood up and started taking over the functionality, the historical functionality of the federal government when it comes to protecting and enforcing the border and the immigration laws. Now, my answer to that is, what is the state left to do when the federal government, the president, abandons these responsibilities that we spoke of earlier? Well, in that case, I say the state has every right, especially when they're a border state. But any state impacted by this crisis should be allowed to step up because the federal government is absent. So I think what you're seeing is you're seeing a little bit of a hangover on the judicial side of saying, listen, Texas Department of Public Safety, you shouldn't even be involved in this. You should not be doing this. Now, the problem with that is they do have a point, right? Because it is a federal responsibility statutorily. But I think the courts, and you see some of the courts, even the Supreme Court with some very close decisions that they've had, they're all starting to recognize more and more at their own different paces that, look, this really is not fair to a state like Texas to have to absorb all of this illegal immigration and everything that comes with it and not be able to take some actions in their own hands because there's no relief coming from the federal government. I mean, let's remember that, you know, the president's got, President Biden, that is, has a saying, don't tell me what you value, show me your budget, and I'll tell you what you value. Well, if you look at the budgets of DHS, all of the money is used for not law enforcement, not enforcement of the laws, but processing. And that's why we've seen Customs and Border Protection be used more for the processing, more for the administrative side of, as a matter of fact, there was actually carve outs in the most recent omnibus that said to CBP, you may not use this money for enforcement operations. So a lot of politics going on here.
Yeah, absolutely. Chuck, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've been reading about robberies, assaults, battery, kidnapping, rape, sexual assault by illegal alien men. And then police and Border Patrol are being instructed to label these criminals as white males. Is there any truth to this story? And is this to, if there is it to cover up the crime by letting it blend into a large population of Americans?
Yeah, well, if you're talking about typically the additional crimes that are committed within the United States, I can't talk to the demographics that are ultimately being put down. I've heard some rumblings about that, but nothing that can be validated. What I can tell you, and the reason why they're getting away with it and remaining in the country after they commit these crimes, is because in many cases, they're committing these crimes in sanctuary cities. Now, sanctuary cities should be something that is outlawed. And if it's not outlawed, the federal government does have recourse, that being the president. And that is withhold the federal public safety grants that go to sanctuary cities. These are to the tunes of hundreds of millions of dollars for all of these major cities. I mean, the high hundreds of millions of dollars that go to these cities that could be cut off by Congress to say, look, you don't practice public safety. You don't cooperate with the federal government when it comes to those in the country illegally committing crimes and sharing that information with ICE so they could immediately be deported. They don't do that. So cut off the funding. Former President Trump actually did that previously with the city of New York for a short time. And guess what changed? New York's policies during that time. As soon as they got the money back, a new administration came in, they went back to their same old practices of not working with ICE. But again, there's no accountability, no deterrence. And that's why the message is out globally to make the trip to the United States. You'll be taken care of. And if you commit crimes, you won't be held accountable.
Wow. That is very frustrating. Yeah, I had been reading about that, but like my brain, where I'm not a criminal, it doesn't make sense to me. But if you want to commit crimes and you can get to a sanctuary city, it's like they bend over backwards to make sure you're having a great time and that all your needs are met. I know we're getting a little bit short here on time. you were at the executive level of the Secret Service. Why, in your estimation, is Joseph Robinette Biden withholding Secret Service from RFK Jr., even though he's met all of the requirements as somebody running for president of the United States?
Well, I'll say one thing about the agency which I served, and what I was most proud of was the apolitical nature of the organization. So it's disheartening when you think that there may be some politics in which the services of the Secret Service are being swayed one way or another because of a certain candidate. Look, my impression with this is that this is a check the box type process. It is. Where does the candidate rank in the polls? How much money's been raised? How many primaries have been entered? If these are all fulfilled, then you should get the protection. I know that there's been threat assessments done already. We know the threat level based on the history of the last name, and we know that some recent events would warrant protection by the Secret Service. This, unfortunately, comes down to two people that we've been talking about who are responsible for the border crisis. Once again, the president and the Secretary of Homeland Security. They are both key players in the assigning of Secret Service protection. So I'm sure the Secret Service has made their recommendations. And whatever those recommendations, if they have been on the side of granting protection, have fallen on deaf ears. But that is not a decision that the agency makes. That, unfortunately, falls to the politicians.
Okay, interesting. Thank you for clarifying that.
Sure.
Tell me about your book, Terrorists on the Border and in Our Country. What are we going to learn by buying and reading the book?
Yeah, no, thanks for the opportunity. Almost 3 years really in the making, this book in which we were really predicting what the outcomes were going to be. And like I said, we take a very down the middle approach to this from a national security standpoint. Either what's being done and has been done makes sense or it doesn't. And what we found out is, look, none of this makes any sense. It actually undercuts our entire national security apparatus and the efforts to keep the country and Americans safe. So we go through that very meticulously from the start. What were the decisions in the beginning to cause this crisis and get things to spiral out of control? Like I said, we take a look at the historical politics of this issue to demonstrate how unprecedented the actions of this administration actually are. We look at our tenuous relationship over the years with Mexico, how that's been flourishing, and at times how it's not, like now under this administration. But ultimately, we go through solutions. What needs to be brought to the table to fix this? Because quite frankly, four more years of this, if we do the math and simply multiply it by two, can the country really handle close to 30 million illegal migrants of unknown backgrounds being allowed to roam the country? Never mind our sovereignty, as we're defined by our borders and our culture and our shared experiences. But what does this do to the country from a security standpoint? I fear that another 4 years of this would be very, very hard to overcome. But I'll tell you, if we get a switch in administration after this initial 4 years, there is a way to fix this. And deportations, I know the term mass deportations are being used. These would have to be sequenced deportations, obviously starting with those national security concerns, violent criminal concerns, and immediately starting from there. And then you have to go after those that are given the notices to appear that never show up. And you got to start rounding them up and deporting them. So there is a sequence that's possible to achieve getting many of the people that showed up into the country illegally out.
Okay, interesting. Very cool. thank you very much for coming on, sharing all this wisdom and knowledge. I know that, you know, you're a very busy guy. The book is great. I'm going to put a direct link down below so that people can go get it. Chuck, if people want to follow you online, what is the best place that I can push them towards?
Yeah, sure. My website is charlesmarino.com, or you can follow me on X at charles_marino.
Okay, I will put those down below as well. Thank you so much for coming on. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Stephen. Yeah, you too. I enjoyed it. Thank you.